and welcome to You've Got Time, an Orange is the New Black podcast. My name is Erin Quayle, and I'm your hostess. And this week, we are discussing Season 4, Episode 11 of Orange is the New Black, entitled People Persons. And when I first watched this episode, when all of the Season 4 came out in, I guess, in June, I remember thinking that I felt like it was such a landmark episode of television. It affected me really deeply. I was, you know, kind of thunderstruck at the end of it and thought that it wrapped up a lot of different mental health concerns very nicely into one episode of television, and that it, you know, could potentially get people thinking about mental health disorders and talking about them. And that's exactly what we did in this episode. So I brought back one of our favorite guests, Jillian Tans, who is a licensed therapist, to talk about the episode. If you haven't listened to previous episodes, Jillian is a therapist in the Fairfield County area in Connecticut. So if you're ever looking for a therapist, just look her up on Psychology Today. And, you know, schedule an appointment with her. As you can hear from the episode, she's a really great listener, really insightful. And actually, as we deconstructed the episode a little bit, we kind of found some things that we didn't really love about the way that the show portrayed mental health and the way that, you know, things were kind of unfolded in this episode. Although there was a lot to love about it as well, and we kind of got into the pros and cons of it, as well as, you know, all sorts of different things regarding mental health, the mental health of Healy, of Lolly, of Suzanne, and just of the guards, and sort of everyone in the episode. We touched on their reactions to what was happening, and just in general the weight of the episode itself. So I hope you guys enjoy this conversation, and it was a long conversation, so I'm going to keep this intro short and sweet. And please do not hesitate to contact us. In addition to our Twitter handle at You've Got Time Podcast and our Facebook page, facebook.com/You've Got Time Podcast. We've also opened a kind of a voicemail hotline for people to call in and share their thoughts and feelings about the final few episodes of Orange is the New Black. And we will hopefully be compiling your voicemails into an episode where we kind of talk about the impact of those final two episodes in Season 4. So you can call us at 302-31-OITNB, and that's obviously stands for Orange is the New Black. And so we definitely want to hear from you, so please give us a call or drop us a line at our email, which is youvegottimepodcast@gmail.com. So thanks so much, and I hope you guys enjoy this talk. Bye. All right, well, so this episode, episode 11, I think it's called People Persons. It's kind of the beginning of the end, and it's what, like, one of the big things that Season 4 has been building up to. The next two episodes kind of deal with all the other stuff, but this deals with predominantly, like, the mental health stuff that's been going on in the episode. And so, you know, the body was found at the end of the last episode, and the entire prison goes on lockdown. Mm-hmm. And, like, that was, like, a crazy cliffhanger. And then they pick it right back up, which is good. But, you know, the horns go off, and then Flores and Piper are standing up on that table, and it's, like, so anticlimactic. They're just kind of like, okay, get down from the table. Yeah. You're done. And so, you know, the guards kind of have a really odd reaction to what's going on with the body. And so there's Caputo's way of kind of dealing with things, and then there's Piscatella's way of dealing with things, and the guards seem to kind of be on board with Piscatella. So what do you think about
most
that
of them
clash?
Anyway, I think, yeah, it's pretty sad that, like, Donuts is the moral authority of the group, right? Like,
yeah.
And then he has that funny line later about, like, funny shit happens here. I woke up with my, you know, no,
yeah,
pants on this one time, and it's like, yeah, there's a reason you woke up with, mm-hmm, no pants on. But,
and it reminds you of his transgressions,
right,
too.
Yeah, so. And the fact that he's now, like, sort of, like, the moral compass of the group is, like, frightening. But,
yeah,
I found myself, like, really empathizing with Joe Caputo,
mm-hmm,
at the beginning of that episode, because, like, he's really not in control at,
yeah,
all.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's, like, totally lost control of his
you know, subordinates, I guess. And Piscatella is kind of a much stronger personality who thinks he knows what's best. And, and he doesn't really, I mean.
And the veterans among the guards are responding to that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they're responding to that us versus them mentality because that's something, you know, I mean, that I would assume, I don't really know too much about veterans, but I would assume that's something that's, you know, that's very much a mentality when you go to war.
Yeah, I think it probably has to be that mm-hmm. I mean, they said, you know, how do you not know who this guy was? Like mm-hmm. when we were in, what was it, Afghanistan, we knew who everybody mm-hmm. was. Mm-hmm. We knew all of our team members, you mm-hmm. know. So I forget the female guard's name, but she was like really shocked that it, and outraged, really.
Right, that one of the guards could have died on their watch.
And nobody noticed.
Right. Yeah, but it was like, it was before, it was also like during this weird transitional thing where, that, so the guard came in at the very end of the season before Piscatella even came in, because it was when the fence came down mm-hmm. and then the Max guards had
like,
to be pulled up.
Yeah, but presumably he didn't just sneak in with a guard outfit on. Right. Presumably he was hired, right?
I think so. Yeah, I think he even says something about it before he like attacks Alex.
So how do you just like completely lose track of this employee?
Yeah,
you know, like you don't just want, you don't wonder what happened to this guy. Mm-hmm. Like you hired a guy. Mm-hmm. You did like a background check conceivably. Mm-hmm. Like, have his social security number on file.
Well, a fake one, probably, but yeah.
You issued him a guard's uniform. Like, mm-hmm. you're not wondering why he's not showing up on shift? Like,
yeah. Yeah, I guess he just kind of got lost in the shuffle between the new inmates and the fence coming down and Piscatella coming on and the new veteran guards.
Yeah, those are serious
and
management issues, though. I mean, I think the guards have a right to be upset.
Mm-hmm. And Caputo, at that point in time, was, like, management. He mm-hmm. was, he was like, in Fig's old position. What mm-hmm. is it, like, he's not the warden. He's, like, the director of activity or something.
The director of human activity.
Yeah, something weird. Yeah, he's not the warden anymore. Like, a kinder,
de
gentler.
De facto. He's what the warden was before it got bought by
MCC.
Yeah.
I feel like it's
MCC.
Yeah, whatever. But, and that's something that, actually, we haven't, this is the first episode I have recorded since the private prison thing came to light. And it's funny, because I've been kind of, like, thinking about, like, what's gonna happen? And, like, obviously Litchfield's not gonna shut down next season. or any other season. Like, it's gonna it's gonna have to keep going. But, like, what's gonna happen to Caputo? Like, you know, the government may come back in at some point in time and, like, assess whether or not Litchfield is effective as a prison, mm-hmm. and he's not doing a good job. So, you know, or he means well, but he's kind of like bungling he did get Sister
out
of
the shoe. He was not prepared for this job at all.
Right. No, not even like he doesn't really have like the backbone like Fig. Like Fig's got a backbone and
Fig's got some reptilian genes in her.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a mush.
Yeah, he is. And he's just so, I don't know. But he's trying to impose the order as it should be, and mm-hmm. you know, we see him in different, so we see him at the beginning and then we also see him with MCC and they're like, you need to come see us, which doesn't really even make any sense, and he's like the only one making sense, mm-hmm. but no one's listening because he's in this like crazy place, and so Piscatella and the guards kind of take things into their own hands and impose like interrogation tactics and profiling and all sorts of crazy things to kind of flush out the person who killed the guard. I mean, and it's clearly, it's a serious issue. There's a dead person, you know, I mean.
And you can understand why their tempers would be hot about it, because, like, that mm-hmm. could be any one of them from their perspective.
Right. Especially since they have this, like, such a strong us versus them mentality mm-hmm. going on, like, oh, like, they could just rise up, and, like, they really could rise up and hurt you because someone did or something happened to that guard. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they were, I don't know. It's just like a clash that starts the episode, and then Caputo is kind of rendered useless.
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting when they were talking about it amongst the guards, how one of them said, well, there's a killer on the loose. And Caputo mm-hmm. was like, there's a killer in jail, not a killer on the loose. Uh-huh. There's a killer in prison.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it reminds you that, you know, you're in a different world. Like, you're not...
Right.
I think that particular guard was probably, maybe it was Donuts, it was somebody who mm-hmm. was kind of like a rube, right? I forget who it was.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But
exactly.
It just makes you remember, like, this isn't just, like, a prison, it's his job, like, mm-hmm. it's his life. And in any other circumstance, you would say, like, there's a murderer on the loose.
Yeah, exactly. And there are Pensatucky or Doggett or whatever, she's a murderer.
Yeah.
And she's in jail. Like, she is capable of murder. She has murdered someone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we know.
Or Frida.
Frida. Oh my god. Oh yeah, that line with Frida. She was like,
I killed a cop with his own gun. Wait, did I get caught for that?
Yeah, and who else? The Lorna. Lorna, right? The mute one. She like killed her boyfriend or husband by like pushing him off. No, not Lorna. That's oh my god. The mute lady. I can't remember her name. Lorna is Morello, but
yeah, I can't think of her name right now either.
I can't think of her name, but she killed someone too. So it's like there are murderers in prison that are there, and they're, you know, there are murderers there. And actually, I mean, you know, some of the veterans are murderers too. I mean, under completely different circumstances, but like some of them have taken lives. So
yeah, that's pretty hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was an interesting thing for me. Like, it refreshes your memory that, like, this is a prison. Mm-hmm. And even though these people, every day you're, like, interacting with them, like, the guards maybe even have, like, chummy relationships with some of the inmates. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, they may have done some really terrible things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and we've all done terrible things, I guess. Like, and I think that's kind of reflected in Charlie Donuts. He's like the voice of reason, and he's a rapist, you know. And I've read a bunch of articles about kind of how different people reacted to that idea, and we'll get to that in future episodes too, but the idea of like sympathizing with aggressors on the show. And that's kind of what's happening here, because like he's changing his mind. And can you change your mind after like a horrible, can you be reformed after this horrible, heinous act? And like, isn't that what prison's supposed to be all about? Like reforming yourself after.
Except he's on the other side of it.
Except he is on the other side of it. But can you be reformed after doing something horrible?
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting too. And the show gives us like plenty of time to think about it, right? Mm-hmm. Because they don't just like force them back into a relationship right away. Like a whole, what was it, a season, two seasons goes by before you see any like start of a reconciliation between the two of them, but he does seem like sincerely apologetic,
Or at least he's thinking about the repercussions of what he did, and thinking about behavior change. So
I think it's interesting because you never really see that sort of like gray area,
right? Like
portrayed
rapists,
on TV, it's either
lifetime.
You're either like a rapist or you're a good person, and like real people. I don't know why it's surprising to us, but real people are not black and white like that.
Mm-hmm. Very true. And I think part of the, and in the scene with the guards at the beginning, and we're definitely going to move on from that, but there's a lot of black and white with the guards. And I think, I talked about this with someone on a previous episode, and I think you and I may have even talked a little bit about it, about how veterans were very irked by the portrayal of veterans on the show. And I can definitely understand why, because they're as close to black and white as you can kind of get on the show. Piscatella, I don't think Piscatella is a veteran. Maybe he is? I'm not sure.
I'm not clear on that. He's definitely a veteran guard.
Right, but I don't know if he served in any sort of military capacity.
I don't know either.
But at one point, Piper like salutes him in a previous episode, and she's like, you're not supposed to do that unless you've been in the military. And she's like, how do you know I wasn't? And he like, for a minute, he gets kind of like, oh wait, I'm making assumptions. But yeah, so there is the black and white there. And the, you know, the one guard with the blonde hair, she's like, oh, I'm trained in extraction techniques. And so they really don't paint the veterans in the best light, but then they paint the rapist in kind of like a gray area. Mm-hmm. So I can definitely understand why veterans were a little peeved or maybe furious by the portrayal.
Well, they also probably didn't do a great job screening their new hires, right? They probably just like took the first five people that signed up. So I guess they don't do a good job of making that clear on the show probably, but
Litchfield needs a better hiring and HR management system. The veterans are all like, you know, trigger happy people, and that are like, you know, they're very like black and white, and then one of them is dead in the garden. So
yeah,
so things aren't going so great for the HR department at Litchfield. But so they put the prison in lockdown, which I'm not sure. I think that was like Caputo wanted it in lockdown, but I think he was basically like, everyone just chill out, like everyone just be.
I don't think it was his idea to keep the lights on. I don't think Fight Club was his idea.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I don't. I mean, definitely, that definitely wasn't his idea. That was only the one crazy guard's idea. But so there was like all this stuff going on within the prison during the lockdown. Nikki's going through withdrawal. We've kind of been seeing her and her opiate addiction or sort of progress throughout the season, and seen some really like kind of touching moments and kind of some worrisome moments with her. And now she's A, Red has cut off all of her supply, so mm-hmm. she has no more supply. And B, she, you know, maybe she's kind of listening now. Maybe she's kind of trying for Red. So it's kind of surprising that Doggett is the one who comes mm-hmm. to help her with her little weird basket. The scene between her and
Doggett was so funny.
Yeah, it was very touching in a way. And I was like, yeah. Doggett might have some, like, counselor potential, like, when she
Didn't
gets out of jail.
Didn't she even say to her, like, how is it that, like, prison has made you a better person? I think mm-hmm. you're the only person here who got better in prison.
Yeah. And I forgot what did she say? I think you watched the episode more recently than I did.
I don't remember what she said. Yeah,
she was just kind of like, I don't really remember. But really, she's like the most like if there were like a yearbook, like an Orange mm-hmm. is New Black yearbook, she would be like most changed.
Yeah, definitely. She gets that superlative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's far more insightful, and she's thinking about things, and she, you know, and she also knows what it's like to go through withdrawal because she mm-hmm. was a drug addict for mm-hmm. A long time. That's maybe one of the. I mean, I think her drug was meth. I'm not sure what. Maybe it was everything.
I think meth. Maybe whatever she could find.
Mm-hmm. That's because at the point we see her,
she had to get that whole new set of teeth.
That's true. Yeah, that's definitely a meth.
Was that from Piper or was that from meth?
I think it was both. Like, I think her teeth were all messed up, and then Piper like messed them up more. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's definitely a meth thing. That's not like an opiate thing. So, but still, like, I'm sure she has, you know,
she's got some experience
with withdrawal. Yeah, and she comes and she like kind of like midwives her through her withdrawal symptoms, and mm-hmm. she gives her that basket, and Nikki's kind of like, why don't I just throw up into the bags? And she's like, but I made it. And it's just like so sweet and so caring, and everyone else is kind of just running around and doing whatever, but Doggett like wants to be this caretaker kind of, and it's just an interesting twist to her character.
Yeah, she's had a really interesting journey.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to kind of see her with Nikki, especially since Nikki is also very insightful about other people too, but mm-hmm. she like needs help in that moment, and she kind of like tries to push Doggett away at first, and then they start talking, and like they have a little heart to heart, and I liked it.
Well, Doggett's also like Healy's protege, so it's interesting that you say she has counselor potential.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Well, she, yeah, that is true.
Maybe they'll make that an inmate job at some point.
That's true. I mean, hey, like, that might not be the worst idea. I mean, I don't know, actually. I'm not sure. I'm not sure about how that would work. Inmates as counselors? Or maybe, like, I don't know.
Maybe adjunctively.
Yeah, or, like helping run. Like, sometimes when I used to run groups, like, I would be, like, I would say, like, oh, someone else is my co-counselor today. Or, like, oh, like, have them run the group, but, like, have, like, mm-hmm. a counselor be there mm-hmm. as, like, the role of authority. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes, like, those lines get blurred, I think, if someone's in the group. And, yeah. But Doggett is definitely, she's kind of, like, she's helping people. And, mm-hmm. like, she likes helping people. And it's just, it's an interesting thing. And she's, I don't know, I just saw some potential in her. So who knows, maybe. I don't know if she's ever getting out of jail. I mean, she does have those pretty diesel lawyers from, like, the Christian Coalition or whatever, but...
I wonder what she would do if she ever got out of prison. She's moved from, like, different friend groups, too, within the prison.
Mm-hmm.
She's really, like, diversified, like, the people she hangs out with. I wonder what her life would be like.
That's actually really true. Yeah, because she... And she's, like, bounced back and forth to different groups, too. And, like, Boo was her friend, but then Boo got mad. And so now she's kind of looking for a different outlet. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, she's... I don't know. That'd be interesting to see. Like, last episode, we got to see Alita mm-hmm. For, like, a minute. Not really for very long. But we got to see her out of prison. It might be interesting to see more of the characters out of prison as things progress, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, so there's Doggett. Doggett's helping Nikki, but then, so Red's not there because she is dealing with this huge storm of crazy, because obviously she knew that, you know, no mm-hmm. one knows she knows. I mean,
she's really good at pretending, though. She was like, oh, who is she? Yeah. Piscatella's like, how do you know it's a she?
Mm-hmm. She was, and there's that scene. I took like a snapshot to it because I live tweeted the episode on Monday for the at You've Got Time Pod handle on Twitter, and I took like a screenshot, and it's like Red with like a light in her face, and like the staging of that scene was so dramatic and so like kind of gave her a lot of power because it showed her kind of really assessing her surroundings and kind of taking everything in because she's so shrewd.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, like she's such a good actress too.
Yeah.
and she's kind of dealing with things, and so she meets with Piper and all the people that know, except for Lolly. They kind of shut Lolly out. And Alex is being really annoying and kind of, like, going through her own stuff and being really selfish. And at least that's kind of how I perceived
it.
But
I mean, she's the one who killed the guy. So
right. Well,
she's
no
got
one,
the most to lose.
No one really knows that, though, right? Except for Alex, I think.
Yeah. But I mean, if you're not a sociopath, I imagine that gives you some anxiety.
That's true. That is true, I guess. But it's like she can't, like, she's not really seeing the larger picture that, like, everyone's kind of in it. And mm-hmm. so she's... I don't know. I just kind of thought, I mean, yeah, her reaction was definitely very believable, but I just felt like it was kind mm-hmm. of, it was more focused on her than, like, the bigger picture, so.
Probably. The other side of it is, if this guy's death becomes public, mm-hmm. or if they figure out his identity, then it could get back to the drug dealer that mm-hmm. she's not actually dead.
Right.
The hit didn't work. That, mm-hmm. So, then another hit could be put out on her, and mm-hmm. so I think she's got a lot to lose.
I guess the MCC whole privacy thing kind of works in Alex's advantage.
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but so, I was also thinking, like, how much time has really passed since the beginning of the season, and, I mean, I guess the body is decomposed, like, a little bit, but, like, I'm not sure.
I don't know, we don't
time.
See it, right?
Yeah, we don't see how much, I feel like it's not that long of a period of time, so... Maybe, I don't know, maybe they'll send another one for her next...
Well, we know the season hasn't changed, like, the weather.
That's true.
So
mm-hmm.
Must be within a few months, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I think that if they want to, like, continue to keep Piper as, like, a main... Or, like, a character floating in the prison, they have to kind of stretch it out, too. Because she only had, what, like, 18 months, and there's three more seasons after this one, so...
she didn't do anything to get time added on.
Well, I think that's unclear, actually, where she, like, testified against... Kubra, I guess, when in the second season. I think it's unclear, but, like, why would she get time added?
I don't know. For some reason, I had a thought that maybe she had done something. I don't remember.
She pled the fifth, right? Or something, more or less. But I think there's some confusion about that as to whether mm-hmm. or not she got more time. So maybe. I don't, you've got time, I guess. Mm-hmm. but, yeah, but they're all kind of, you know, the Red and her daughters, I guess Piper and Alex are kind of her daughters now. They're kind of all working to come up with a plan, and obviously Red's the first one to be questioned because it's her garden. Mm-hmm. And then they round up some other prisoners, and Red and Piscatella have that conversation where he basically just lays out his whole philosophy to her. He's like, you're the prisoner, mm-hmm. I'm a guard, and I don't like prisoners like you because... They, like, I think his whole thing was that, like, he didn't like prisoners like that because it made him feel like they were human, kind of.
Yeah.
And he couldn't...
It throws off his whole sort of paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
The way that... the reason he's able to do his job.
Right, right. Yeah. And he couldn't... He can't deal with that. Although Red is manipulating him.
Yeah. For sure.
So...
For sure. Which is why we love her.
Mm-hmm. And there are reasons... why certain people like Piscatella may have that mindset, mm-hmm. because the people who are kind of chummy may want something, mm-hmm. or may, like, want to take advantage of the person who is in charge, or mm-hmm. or something like that. So, not that I'm advocating Piscatella's view, but I think it's something that a lot of people use to protect themselves. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And he clearly mirrors the feeling that a lot of people in America, I think, have about quote-unquote criminals. So, you know, criminals, kind of like the us and them mentality. Mm-hmm. Criminals are them, and we're the law-abiding citizens and things like that. But it's kind of disturbing that, you know, criminals, once they're branded criminals, aren't necessarily human anymore.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've talked before about, like, how Piscatella feels about the inmates, and I don't know, even though, like, by the end of the show you certainly don't really feel a lot of sympathy towards Piscatella, I still do feel some sympathy towards that predicament of trying to hang on to your humanity while treating other human beings as though they're less than you. You know, mm-hmm. it must be a really difficult line to walk.
Yeah, I think I agree with that, too, because it is hard, and I think I've talked about it before on here. Like, you know, even in outpatient, you get people who are just, that's their behavior, is to kind of, like, manipulate people, and it's hard to kind of, it's a difficult thing to deal with while, like, still treating everyone like an individual. And, well, actually, that's a different thing, I think. Like, if you treat everyone like an individual, if someone comes to you and they're manipulative, mm-hmm. then, like, you can deal with that individual. But if you have this worldview that is, like, us and them, then it kind of closes you off to, like, each person individually. But, like, as a prison administrator, I don't really know. I've never had that job. So I keep going back and forth in my head about, like, how I would handle that. Because you never know until you're in the situation.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that I've never had to make that decision.
Yeah.
All the jobs I've had, I've been really encouraged to see the people you work with as people, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's I don't know, it's heartening to do that, too. So, to have that type of environment to thrive in and to help your clients thrive in, too.
Mm-hmm.
But it was funny because I posted something on the You've Got Time Facebook page, and I think you responded to it about the air conditioning in prisons, and I went on, and like, sometimes I read the comments on Facebook. I probably shouldn't, because they make me mad sometimes, but people are like, air conditioning, like, obviously they didn't read the article, because it was basically about how air conditioning, like, the prisons are so hot, the people are dying, there's, like, people fighting, there's, you know, it's causing a lot of problems, because the prisons are just so, like, unbearably hot.
And some people have medical conditions that makes them more susceptible to that.
Right, and so it's causing big problems in the South to not have air conditioning in some of the prisons. And so I was reading the comments, and some people were like, no, they're criminals, they don't deserve blah, 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 blah. And I was kind of going back and forth and being like, well, like, some of these people are in there for, like, unpaid fees, or they're there for,
that's
like,
what really gets me.
You know, they're there for unpaid child support, or getting into, like, getting a DUI. Like, I mean, not that getting a DUI, but it, like, things that are not, like, murder and, like, you know, theft, and, like, things that we traditionally...
That they were not sentenced to torture. They were not sentenced to death, right? They were sentenced to, like, a couple years in prison, maybe 10, I don't know. But, yeah, they were not sentenced to being, you know, having their lives in danger.
Yeah. And they're just, like, small and smaller than we would think of, like, things that, you know, like, I, like, when I was a kid, like, I, you know, I did things that, like, I'm not necessarily super proud of, and, like, potentially could have gotten arrested for, and I didn't get arrested. Like, they're just, like, I always think, and I feel like I've said this before on the podcast, but I always go back to the first or second season where the younger guard, I can't remember her name, her real name's Lauren Lapkus, but she's got the blonde hair, and she's really sweet, and she got fired by Caputo, because she was basically like, I don't want to give out shots or something. I don't know if you remember her, but she's helping Piper on a ladder, and she was like, a couple decisions one way or another, I could be you easily. And it's so true. And that's something that I used to tell my clients all the time. Like, we're just like a couple decisions away from being each other. So it makes me so mad when people kind of go, oh, the criminal's in jail. And it's like, okay, well.
It's just so much easier to think of it that way. You know, I think it makes it really easy for people to make moral judgments when they've just decided to paint a whole group with a broad brush, which we're seeing so much of in this election cycle.
Yeah, that's true, too. And not a lot of discussion. I know, I mean, just like black and white, like Bernie Sanders talked a lot about our mass incarceration problem, and neither one of our, you know, the presidential nominees that are, you know, up for election now are not talking about it. And it's a hard thing. Like, I'm glad that Bernie Sanders kind of brought it into the narrative a little more, but it's being forgotten, which is, I don't know.
It doesn't win votes, I don't think.
No. It's not a sexy thing to talk. Mass incarceration is not, like, something that people like to talk about. Because that's the thing. Like, people don't really want to think about, like, criminals or think about rights for criminals, because it's, like, gets into a whole, like, quagmire of difficult moral issues.
Yeah. It's crazy because you think about people that are so-called values voters, right? And we always think of them in terms of, like, the abortion debate or whatever. But, like, it's my value that we should not, like, imprison people basically for having a debt. Like, we shouldn't have debtors prisons. You know, like, that is not a good use of resources. And we shouldn't, like, we shouldn't have people languishing in solitary confinement. You know, that's a value. But those don't seem to be things that people coalesce around as, like, voting blocks. But I don't know why they couldn't be. You know, there's no good reason why it couldn't be.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of times the, you know, the populations that aren't necessarily, like, the big donating populations to different political groups, they're not the ones that can vote with dollars. So.
Right. So environmental causes and all that kind of stuff.
Right. So, like, different things kind of get put on the platforms because they're the ones funding the campaigns. So, I don't know. So Piscatella is very indicative of a lot of people, a lot of, like, the American consciousness around around criminals. So... so he kind of, you know, he's able to do whatever he wants. Like, he gets the power to, I guess he's kind of like the voters who pay with their money, I guess. I don't know. But, he comes up with his own way of doing things, even though Caputo was obviously said no. So he rounds up the usual suspects. And it's actually kind of interesting the second time I watched it to see, like, the people that he kind of rounded up. And mm-hmm. you see Maria there, and it's like, what did Maria do? You see...
Or Cucutio.
Yeah, but Cucutio says, like, at the very beginning of the season, I think she said that she didn't hurt anyone, which is interesting, because it's like, well, what did she do then? And then Caputo kind of reacts to her chart, which, mm-hmm. so I hope we get, like, a little bit more on her next season, because I would definitely be interested to see what her crime was and what she did. But, and then we get Suzanne, who, obviously, the flashback kind of shows what she did, and
it's so heartbreaking
and it was so interesting because we've gotten flashbacks from Crazy Eyes before, but mm-hmm. they didn't necessarily show what she did, and mm-hmm. it's always kind of a little interesting to see because you can't assume, you know, like mm-hmm. like you can't assume what and what she did was just so like, what did she do, really? Like, it's hard.
She reacted poorly.
Mm-hmm.
And she made bad decisions. And she's such an interesting character because, you know, she says in the episode, like, I'm a young 28. And she really does have a very, like, childlike mentality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's so interesting to see that mentality paired with, like, her, like, what I would consider a superior intellect.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
She's such an interesting character.
That's true. Like academically, she's very
right?
intelligent.
Yeah.
Like, she's... I don't know if she
writes plays, right? Like,
yeah.
She has all these references that could only come from reading, like, classic literature.
Mm-hmm.
And
she uses, like, big words, like, all the time. And
yeah.
she's very well-read, and she does think about things critically. But, like, when it comes to emotional stuff, it's a little tougher
yeah,
for her.
Yeah, I would have such a hard time diagnosing her.
Yeah.
You know? And I think, like, probably yeah, a lot of it is for the dramatization. Like,
mm-hmm.
she might not be your typical person you'd end up seeing an outpatient, right?
Mm-hmm.
But she's so interesting that way because there's such an innocence to her.
Mm-hmm. But, like, violence, it's like, she's capable of violence. We've seen her.
Yeah, she's got a short fuse.
Mm-hmm.
She's got, like, a really low tolerance for frustration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although, I would say, like, if we kind of jump a little bit forward to the Fight Club thing, like, she had pretty high tolerance in, like, she kept on being like, I don't want this. Like, I don't
mm-hmm.
want this. And then she did snap, and then
mm-hmm.
she went too far. But it's like, she was, even though Cucutia was pushing her and all the other people were pushing her and there was this really high stress situation,
mm-hmm.
she, like, abstained for a really long time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, she snapped. I mean...
It's funny how we've seen her get, like, so, like... less crazy, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
through the episodes.
Yeah,
you know,
like people are calling her Suzanne,
like,
more.
Yeah, like in the beginning, like she was that lady who, like, peed on the floor
mm-hmm.
to intimidate Piper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like, who is this bonkers lady, right? You weren't even sure.
She was dangerous.
She didn't have a screw loose. She had, like, a whole bag of screws. You know,
yeah.
like they were just. It was just. But then they humanized her, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like she was, like, getting better socialized. And that she was, like, pretty stable.
Mm-hmm.
And then this whole situation just completely
mm-hmm.
blew the lid off that.
Yeah. Yeah. And and it wasn't really... Because it's, like, the opposite of what you should be doing with someone who has those... Who are presenting with those symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're putting her in a stressful situation. They're... I mean, calling her names and being just, like, really abusive towards her. And, like, and provoking her. Because, obviously, that guard knows that... Well, actually, I don't really know how much she knows about Suzanne, but she's someone who can...
You read her file.
Oh, did
right?
He?
That was what... Isn't that the
oh,
reason
is that
why
what
they
he
called
was
her
doing?
In the first place?
Oh, right,
place?
That's true. They read all the files, so he knew that she... I mean, and who knows exactly how everything was documented in her file. Like, she killed...
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you boil it all down, like, what her, like, crime was, she killed a child. Like, you know, so it... Who knows how it was written up in the file, like, you
but
know.
She has a long history, clearly, of mental health issues, right?
Right, but, like, the guy wasn't looking at that. Like, he's not looking at the nuance in her file. He's just looking at, like, how can I...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I thought it was really interesting, even, like, how you get, like, a little glimpse of, like, what Suzanne has to do in terms of self-care to keep herself stable. Like,
mm-hmm.
when she's talking about, like, she's getting the head nods and the sleepy
yeah.
times. And whatever. Like, she's
and
like,
she knows.
She's like, I need to go to bed. Like,
yeah.
I need my sleep or
mm-hmm.
things aren't going to be good for me. And that's, like, such... That's like such a basic vulnerability factor, right? Yeah. Like, she was at past her bedtime.
And that whole part where she's, like, she's got the, like, maxi pad over her eyes, and, and Tasty's like, it's like a sleepover, and she's like, I did not like sleepovers when I was a kid. And it's a callback to the sleepovers from before, because she never really, like, fit in, and, and like, it's just, it's so sad, and it's... just the her whole story is just really, there's like, there's so much to unpack in there too. Mm-hmm. Like, she, you see her at the beginning and she's so eager and she's such like, she has a job, like, mm-hmm. she's like high functioning. Like, mm-hmm. she, I mean, more or less, like, she lives with her sister and her boyfriend, her husband, fiance,
sister's boyfriend,
like, whatever relationship they had together. And it's like, hey, like, why isn't she living with the parents? Which, I don't know, kind of confused me, because Grace is young and she wants to live a life. She doesn't want to, like, babysit her.
Yeah, I don't know any of my clients, like, family members from, mm-hmm. you know, back when I worked with a different population. Like, I don't know any of them who would have been like, yeah, let's just live together with my boyfriend.
Like, yeah, and, like, you know, that boyfriend is a saint.
That's a lot to ask.
Mm-hmm. It is a lot to ask, especially, like, they were in, I mean, presumably Suzanne's been in jail for years, so it's what, like, and... the girl, Grace, was a couple years younger than Suzanne. Mm-hmm. So Grace is, like, in her early 20s, you know, and mm-hmm. living with her sister who has special needs, you know? Like, mm-hmm. she can't be alone, and she can't, and so...
And she seems almost, like, saintly about it, you know? That whole,
yeah.
And that whole family is very interesting. Like, everyone's, like, white and blonde, and, mm-hmm. like, you have to
like
wonder...
Piper.
It's so... Like, there's so many, like, cultural things you could end up talking about here, mm-hmm. right? Because, like... Suzanne must have felt like an outsider in so many different ways,
yeah.
growing up in a family mm-hmm. where nobody looked like her, and
mm-hmm.
I really feel for her.
Yeah, and she's such a sympathetic character, and I mm-hmm. think that's why so many people like her, because she has that vulnerability, but she also is, like, she's so complicated, and there's so much going on with her. But one thing that really surprised me, because I, like, kind of, especially when the show first came out, after I finished binging it, like, I like to, like, go on and, like, look at comments on, like, social media, and a lot of people were kind of blaming Grace for the whole situation. Like, why did she have to go? And why, like, you know, this is her fault, because if she, and I'm sure Grace blames herself,
yeah.
because I'm sure she does, because, like, but it's not great. Like,
but it's, like, the first time ever that she's left her alone for a weekend. And
right.
This happens.
And this is what happens.
Who could have ever predicted it?
Mm-hmm.
Who could have ever thought, well, she's clearly going to kidnap a child.
Mm-hmm. And it was just, like you said, it was just so poorly, like, there were so many bad decisions that went into that. Mm-hmm. And same with, you know, same with the kid. The kid made a lot of bad decisions, too. Like, he's a kid, so whatever.
Well,
but.
Yeah, but, I mean... just the impulsivity involved mm-hmm. in Suzanne, just being so lonely that she was willing to be like, hey, kid, mm-hmm. like, we know each other.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to my house.
And that mom, like, okay, that kid was what, like, 8 maybe? Mm-hmm. Like, who lets their 8-year-old kid just, like, wander away in a park by himself?
Yeah. I feel like we're doing a lot of victim blaming.
Yeah, that's true, that's true. Well, we love Suzanne so much. But she does kind of display with the kid, what's his name, Dylan, I think. Mm-hmm. She does kind of display that crazy intensity that she did with Piper very, mm-hmm. very early on. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if we're continuing to kind of unpack this a little bit, like, that's, like, attachment issue, because she's adopted, and, like, mm-hmm. she has these emotional issues, and that's also, like, attachment. Like, don't leave me. Like, I love you.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you reciprocate that? And, mm-hmm. like, why can't we be friends forever?
And I think it's Tasty that, like, says to her at some point before, right before the flashback,
mm-hmm.
That she's like, sometimes people need some space. You gotta give people some space.
Yeah, that's true. You do have to give people.
And
Tasty,
she really hasn't learned that lesson at all.
Mm-hmm.
She still hasn't really gotten that.
Yeah, that is true. Because I think at one point, doesn't she talk to Poussey, like, when they're in law? Maybe that was, like, a different episode, but she's just kind of like, you like me or something. And Poussey's like, you beat me up. Like, how am I supposed to like you? Like, but they do. Like, they get along. And I think Tasty has been very good at grounding
mm-hmm.
Suzanne and kind of, like, being patient, being the mom, like,
yeah,
and
she's
being
taking
patient.
Care of her.
Mm-hmm. And she's, you know, her and that social group has definitely been a big reason for Suzanne's progress
mm-hmm.
throughout the seasons too, because she had the whole thing with V, and V manipulated her, and
yeah.
that was a whole terrible thing. And, you know, you see that she just wants to be, like, loved unconditionally. And then we get the whole thing with Kakudio and her and the Fight Club ring, and this is a woman who has betrayed her. She betrayed Kakudio. I mean, she went back to prison, which she should have done, but, and then Kakudio kind of gave her blue labes, which I love. I love that term.
That was so ridiculous.
And so, like, that relationship is probably one of the more complex relationships that Suzanne... Like, it's not a black and white relationship for Suzanne.
Right, and it's her first sexual experience.
That's true, too, yeah. And so she's... So that was, like... Well, Kakudio steps up and she offers to be, like, to fight her or whatever. So that's kind of what... Because Kakudio's got her own issues. We'll hopefully find out about those at some point in time. But... And then they fight and it's just, like, so horrible and heartbreaking. And what does... And then there's a part... I forget, what's the, I think the guard's name is Humphrey, the guy who's, like, the sadistic guard.
The sociopath.
The sociopath. he says something to the white supremacist girl, like, he's trying to egg her on, and he's, like, saying some horrible things to her, and then he's just saying horrible things to everyone, and it feels just, like, it, like, hurts, it, like, physically hurts.
It was terrible
to hear him
watch.
Say that stuff, yeah. And eventually he gets them to fight. And Bailey, like, tries very lamely to stop it.
I couldn't believe how long it took the guard, like, anyone to step in. It was, like, the Latino girls who, like, rushed in to, like, stop the fight.
Yeah.
I mean, they would have let her die.
Yeah. And then they would have had, I mean, a bigger mess on their hands. But they, yeah, because Suzanne, too, like, that's another, like, I haven't really done a ton with anger treatment, but, like, once she turns, kind of like Lolly, like, it was
she just
very
sees red,
mirrored.
And she's in that rageful space. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. It mirrored Lolly, now that I'm thinking about it, it mirrored her with the guard at the very beginning of the season. Like, Lolly kind of just, like, sees red, and she sees someone attacking her friend, and she goes after him and kicks his face in until he's almost, I mean...
Which is sad, really, because, I mean, I know there's a lot of, like, other factors going on, like, these are women who are in prison, but... Like,
which is a huge stressor.
But I also, like, this is something I never saw, like, in, you know, working with people with psychotic disorders. Like, I never saw anyone experience that, like, snap that,
like,
we've
rage.
Seen in both of these characters and then just beat someone else to a pulp. I've never seen it.
Right.
So I feel like, you know, the like, occurrence rate of it on the show is, like, probably far outpacing, like, the, you know, how often you would see it with actual people in the real world. So
that's a really important point, I think, because
it does kind of concern me that that's the way they're portraying people with psychotic disorders, that they're just, like, these fragile people who could snap at any moment. And sure, like, they do have their vulnerabilities, right? Like, Suzanne, you know, when her routine is interrupted, she's definitely, you know, more vulnerable, but yeah, it's pretty troubling. I mean, we see people with all sorts of different health concerns, but and mental health stuff, but we the only time we see people really, like, lose it is when they're people with psychotic disorders.
Right, and it's, and, like, I'm, you know, kind of bringing together now, like, they mirror each, like, where they can't stop, like, where they're so violent that they can't stop, and they, and they're both really the only two women that have, like, severe mental health disorders on the show. So that is really,
and I'm not
troubling.
Saying that couldn't happen, but really, like, the more likely occurrence is for people who have disorders like that to be abused and to be victims of violence. That's far more it's far more prevalent.
Or with, like, anger disorder. Like, I've never witnessed that level of, like, violence in terms of, like, Michael, like, or I've never really, well, I've definitely had clients with anger issues, and, like, sometimes, you know, like, they would, like, so many thoughts, but they would, like, so say their substance was, like, opiate or whatever, and then they would stop using the opiates, and then they would, or marijuana, actually, marijuana, a lot of times people with anger issues smoke marijuana, because it helps them calm down, and it's really effective in helping people calm down, which is, I wonder if there's, like, any research on that. Probably not, because America doesn't really like to research medical marijuana, but they would self-medicate using marijuana, and then we would be like, okay, you can't use marijuana, because A, it stays in your system so long, and so, like, you know, you're going to pee for your probation officer, so they'd be like, okay, well, I'm going to use alcohol instead. Then they would drink alcohol, and they would get into a fight and get arrested anyway, and they would get into these fights, like, they would look for them, almost, like, and so anger issues... they present in all sorts of different people, but like I feel like a lot of times they're like a totally separate thing. Like it's not brought on by psychosis. Like, and you have a lot more experience with people with like psychotic disorders than I do.
Yeah, but I'm not aware of any like studies showing that like there's a like if you have a psychotic disorder, you're more likely to like have a quick temper or have anger issues or mm-hmm. be violent. Like,
right. And that's like two of two on the show are having these issues.
But there is evidence showing that people with mental health issues are more likely to be the victim of a violent crime mm-hmm. than to be the perpetrator.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. You know, when they select out Suzanne and Cocudio for that, mm-hmm. like, fight, that would be realistic, right? Because mm-hmm. they are actually the victims in that scenario.
Right. Exactly. Because, and they're the victims in more than one way. Like, they've been selected for questioning because of, like, they're being profiled for their previous crimes, and then they are...
Which, maybe that's valid.
Maybe, but, like, Cocudio, like I said, Cocudio didn't do any, like, she says she didn't do anything violent, and so, like...
But we don't know.
That's true, we right? don't know, but...
Her relationship with the reality is a little tenuous. I don't know if I would consider her a reliable reporter.
That's true, I really want to know.
I really want to see a flashback.
Yeah, I really just want to know. Or, like, maybe she'll tell us, like, Yoga Jones at some point in time. She'll just mm-hmm. be like, but like you said, she's not super reliable, so we need the flashback as the reliable narrator in that scenario, but...
For all she knows, that story Suzanne wrote is reality. I mean,
that's true. Yeah, she loved that story. Yeah. what was it? Radcocker and the. but yeah, so yeah. I mean, we could definitely talk about Crazy Suzanne. I like to call her Suzanne instead of Crazy Eyes. But we could talk about her all day. But she, you know, her flashback is just definitely like one of the most heartbreaking because you can see all the things. That just, like, it was, like, a perfect storm of things that went wrong for her. And I really think about Grace a lot. And I, you and I talked a little bit about this before, but I keep encouraging people. I haven't looked into it as much as I should, but the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act is something that was recently passed and something that is ideally going to help families in these types of situations moving forward in the future. But that's something I'm going to link to again in this episode when I put it up because I'm going to look into it a little bit more in depth because I know there are detractors mm-hmm. to the act and there are people that really support it. So I don't want to like talk about it too much, but I know that like they're doing something. Mm-hmm. So like that's it's promising.
There's been a lot of controversy about things that have been enacted since Sandy Hook happened. Mm-hmm. And I do need to read more about this most recent Mental Health Act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I'm from San Diego, well, from Newtown, so it's, like, it's interesting because, you know, we know that there was a mother who had a child who had mental health issues, and she didn't really necessarily feel so able to help him, or able to, like, she kind of felt helpless to kind of deal with his issues, and there's so many, you know, not that gentleman, or that, you know, I don't like to say his name, but not that he had the same issues that Suzanne has, but, you know, people with mental health issues, their families don't necessarily know how to care for them appropriately or to get mm-hmm. them the right help, and it's a problem because people have support systems, but even with addiction, like even with the work that I do, like families don't necessarily know how to help their loved
and there's
ones.
There's a lot that gets in the way, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I think when you live with somebody, you like kind of lose sight mm-hmm. of like what's really going on sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think parents can be really reluctant, probably rightfully so, to mm-hmm. get like the system involved.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
you know,
because the shame of the stigma and
worrying mm-hmm. about is this going to go on my kid's record? You know, mm-hmm. what's going to happen? You know. And rightfully so, you know, like you could call the police when your kid's having an episode and they could be not trained to deal mm-hmm. with it.
Yeah. And then something horrible could happen. Mm-hmm. You don't know. Yeah. And so, like I said, I have to look into it. I know, like I said, there are people that kind of oppose it because they feel like it's not necessarily the best version of the act it could be. But, mm-hmm. But it's, I like the fact that people are having the conversations and kind of trying to do something.
Yeah.
So that's,
it's too bad that it's, you know, taken this long and taken the number of tragedies that we've
mm-hmm.
had.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, like, mental health care is being linked with these tragedies is sad, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I have to look more into it, too.
Yeah. Well, and also that, like, mental health care and gun reform, you know, I've what happened almost 4 years ago, the San Diego, because there have been all these other tragedies, and not to take anything away from them, but I obviously, since yeah. I went to Sandy Hook School and I'm from Newtown, like I identify most closely with that tragedy. So, yeah. So I can't believe that it's been so long and not much has been done. So like I said, like mm-hmm. when I saw that Sandy Hook Promise, which is the organization that kind of sprung up after the tragedy happened, was involved with the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act, I got interested. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And like, they're supportive of it. So like, I like want to learn more about it. And I want to know, like, that's something that they were able to do, because they haven't really had a lot of success with gun control. So, but that's a whole nother, actually that there is a little bit in the episode about that too. The guy, when Crazy Eyes checks out the guy, or Suzanne checks out the guy, she's like, orange juice, milk.
And AR-15, yeah.
Which is, it's not funny, but it's like, it's just so ironic, because that's like the weapon of choice for mass.
Yeah.
Like, that was what was used in Orlando. That was what was used in Newtown. That was, you know, and like,
and there they are shopping for it
at
Walmart.
Buy them at Walmart, or mm-hmm. like big box store, or whatever place.
I mean, it's probably Walmart. Meant to be a Walmart, yeah. right? Who else has greeters? Even
that's true. Yeah, Target doesn't have greeters. Yeah, I guess I don't know. I've never been to a Sam's Club. Does Sam's Club have greeters? Costco, you have to show your card.
Probably at Sam's they do too, for like showing your card.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But like Walmart, there's no showing card. It's just like someone saying hi at the
front. Yeah, I think they're just a greeter.
Yeah. Well, it's a good, I mean, you know, Suzanne, that's a good job for Suzanne. Mm-hmm. She's just so friendly.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. But kind of, you know, moving on from that, we do see the guards. And we see the guards with experience kind of get shuffled around. Like you said, Charlie is kind of the one, which is the voice of reason, and he kind of gets punished by having to sit next to the dead body. Yeah. In the dark at night and reading, and then Bailey brings him It, which is like,
yeah, sensitive. Oh,
thanks, good job. Like, I would not, like, I'm a huge Stephen King fan, but
really?
there is no way I would ever read a Stephen King book sitting next to a dead body alone in the dark. There would be no, like, that would just be my nightmare.
That's asking for trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so but he doesn't really seem to be too bothered by it. He's like reading it and because Bailey, because he falls asleep.
Yeah.
And it's like, he fell asleep after reading It, like, by the, he must have been really tired, I guess, but
there's a lot of questions about his mental stability, right?
Yeah, that's true. And then Bailey comes out because he's so worried about what's happening on the inside, and he doesn't feel like he can affect change.
Right.
And so he comes out, and what does he say? He said it's scarier inside, and she's right, like, it's yeah. definitely scarier inside, but yeah. neither one of them... Like, they, you know, I guess it's, like, the group mentality. Like, neither one of them...
They're the only two civilians at this point.
That's true. Right? Well,
or except for the guy who says from Memphis. Oh, and Luscek, who's busy tripping on mollies and having a threesome.
That is, like, the most... I didn't even, like, put that thing, but I... That
what do you was, even do with that?
Like, the most random plot. Like, I'm...
That was a little... Maybe just gratuitous, like, sensationalism, right?
So random. Just, I guess, like, I don't really know even what the aim, like, maybe, like, for some levity.
Yeah, just adding a little bit of levity to a very dark episode, I guess.
Yeah, because it was a very dark episode. Yeah. But then they all have, like, regrets the next day.
Yeah.
They'll wake up and they're like, oh, no.
I love Yoga Dosh. She's like, well, you can leave, but... And you're not a good person. And then they start making out, and it's so funny. Like, she's like, I'm not a good person.
And it's like, and like all this, like a lot of people who aren't good people are like doing stuff in the prison while all that is happening. Mm-hmm. So that's like probably the like nicest thing that's happened, the most lovely thing that's happening in the prison. But yeah, it's. I was just like, I don't even know. That was like the most random plot line ever.
Yeah, I don't even know where to put that.
Yeah, but anyway, so they're, you know, doing their thing, and so Luscek is incapacitated, and he's mm-hmm. the only other civilian that's kind of, and actually he's the most experienced guard on staff. He's the only one that's not gone from
that's
the first
true.
Season. So
what about Memphis guy? Is he also a veteran, or because he was like clashing? The one who is, quote, he's like, you ever worked the ghetto, you know, to that blonde guard? He's like, I know how to do that dance they're doing.
Oh, no, he's like a bigger guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a veteran, so...
Oh, okay.
He's not, I mean, not a veteran, like, he's, like, was in the service. So he was, like, one of the ones that was recently hired.
Yeah.
yeah, I don't think anyone else is left, because Luzchek was the only one that didn't walk out, I believe, when of the original guards.
Right.
So he's really the only one left, and they're just, like, putting him on, like, pussy duty. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
In more ways than one.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. You can, like, flip that both ways. I don't think he would have really done anything about the situation.
No, he would have probably done exactly what he did, which is find a place that's not going to be controversial where you can mm-hmm. hang out for a little while and let it blow over. Mm-hmm. He's not looking to get his hands dirty.
Mm-mm. Not at all. Well.
Oh, we're so full of innuendos. Yeah, mastered that double O and contra today.
But yeah, so all three of the guards who have any sort of, not that the veterans are, but the veterans also have that group mentality thing going on too. They're like us against them, no matter what. Like
their moral code in this situation is really different from a civilian's.
Mm-hmm. Right. And also because they feel like a team, and they feel like what, you know. And so they, you know, although they do complain about no training at the beginning, which is good. I think her name's McCullough, the blonde one. She's like, we just did like a round of two truths and a lie.
And half the people were here, and then.
Yeah, and then that was.
See you later.
That was it. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And they, you know, the guards are just. I don't know. It's just awful. The whole thing's all the whole end of this episode, like leading up to the end, is just like one painful. Like, so there's the fight, and then we see Healy, which we're gonna get into.
Oh God, Healy.
Healy.
Mm-hmm. I really feel for him. You know, you really see like his whole life is wrapped up in this job being like his mm-hmm. purpose. You know,
the only thing.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all he has. And then cherry ice cream.
He just hopes he's going to help somebody, and then he realizes that he really screwed up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's the whole tie-in with his mom and everything, and it's mm-hmm. just, man.
Yeah, and he's, it's just, it's a lot. And it's a lot for him to process, too, mm-hmm. because he realizes, like, he hasn't been listening to Lolly, mm-hmm. And he realizes that, like, he has all these mental health, it's just everything's compounding together.
Yeah. He's failed her, he's failed the guard who mm-hmm. she killed, he's mm-hmm. failed at his job, he's failed at, like, his purpose in life.
Mm-hmm. And his marriage, I mean, he's trying to reach out to his ex-wife mm-hmm. at one point, and he just can't even get her, so he gives up and then, you know, wanders into the water. And, like, what is he really, like, I mean, maybe he can't swim, but I don't know. I don't know what his, I mean, his intention was clearly to harm himself. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's halfway into the water and his phone rings. And that scene is just so, it's just so lonely. Like, it's just so, it's just, like, crippling sadness and loneliness. And you mm-hmm. kind of feel what it's like, you know, in that moment they did a good job of kind of making you feel what he was, like, desperation. Like, I am not, like, there's nothing for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's just, it's sad. And it's also interesting because Healy is not someone that we necessarily sympathize with very mm-hmm. often on the show.
But it's easy to see where he's coming from and how he got as twisted as he got.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Yeah, no. And they've done a good job with his mm-hmm. small flashback, I think, in season 3 with his mom, and then the last one, they did a good job of kind of explaining why he is the way he is. Mm. And so he realizes that, like, Lolly was telling the truth the whole time, and he just wasn't effective. He wasn't listening. He was just kind of dismissing her because mm-hmm. she's quote-unquote crazy, and
he thought he would just calm her down, placate her, mm-hmm. you know. But, I mean, to his credit, like, I don't know if I'd believe her if she said she killed somebody.
That's true, yeah, because, like, you're in prison.
She's building a time machine, for goodness sake,
that's
you know?
That's true, too, yeah. And, but he never really explored that with her. Oh, at least what we've seen. He's mm-hmm. just basically like, is it possible that the voices are telling it? Like, I don't remember exactly what he said, but he dismisses it really quickly. Like, mm-hmm. And even if she did think that she killed someone and she hadn't killed someone, that would have been worthy of a little bit more exploration, I think. Like,
yeah.
And he dismisses it because he just wants to, like, put that Band-Aid on and move it. Like, he wants, like, a quick fix.
I think it's also just as unfathomable to him that Lolly could kill a guard and he wouldn't know about it.
Does say that, doesn't he? He's like, if a guard died here, I would know or something. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, that's pretty presumptuous.
It is pretty unfathomable. It, mm-hmm. it shows how poorly managed that prison is. But I don't think Healy he has no suspicion that that could happen.
Right. Well, because it's his prison and it's his, like, the place where he has control. Mm-hmm. And then when all the control kind of goes away, he collapses and he has nothing left. I like the part where it's funny because he is one of, besides Loose Jack, he's also one, he's not a guard technically, he's technically a therapist, but he leaves and even Loose Jack is like, where are you going? Like, what are you, like, you're supposed to be here. And Loose Jack is never one,
like,
to
how about
follow.
This meeting, huh? Right. He's like, I gotta get something for my car. Yeah, certainly Healy's totally gotten off the reservation, right? Mm-hmm. As soon as he walks out of there and he realizes what's happened.
Mm-hmm. And then he does come back at the end. You know, all these women are being interrogated and Red, they find Red's keys and they're like, oh, mm-hmm. we're gonna, like, whatever. And then Alex goes to confess, because she does, maybe she's not super selfish all along, I guess, because she does kind of go to confess. Maybe she's kind of dealing with something. Like you said, you know, obviously if you're not a sociopath, you're going to be dealing with issues yeah. related to killing someone.
She's like, how do you think I feel? Like, yeah. I'm, like, my skin is crawling, like, I'm jumping out of my skin or something
yeah.
like that. You know, she's like, she is really upset. She's rattled.
Mm-hmm. And rightfully so, because not only did she killed someone she knew. So, and that does come, I mean, maybe that's a little bit of a spoiler, because that does come into play a little later, but we mm-hmm. know, you know from seeing her interact with the guy, like, she knew him, because mm-hmm. they have a conversation before he attacks her. And so she's dealing with, like, a lot of different levels of guilt and like, all sorts of different things. But she goes to confess, but as she goes to confess, Piscatella has...
He's already Healy. Got his Healy. Person.
Yeah, Healy's dripping wet, and he's sitting in Piscatella's. And Piscatella doesn't care either. Like, no one really cares. Like, everyone's just passing the buck, kind of. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, you're one counselor. You're one therapist. Like, maybe there are other therapists there, but I don't think so. Like, I think Healy is it. And your one therapist is sitting there, drenched. You're in a crisis, and the therapist is telling you that, like, he knows what's going on. And, like another thing of, like, sweeping things under the rug. Like, if there's a crisis, like... all this other stuff is happening, like, mm-hmm. like with that's how the guard died in the first place. Like, there was a crisis happening and they ignored this other thing that was happening. And then eventually they found out that the guard was dead and whatever. But
yeah, I don't think, like, Healy's mental health crisis is at the top of the priorities though for
that's
Piscatella.
True. But, like, why is he, like, that's a weird thing. Like, he does ask about it. He asks about it. And then he's just, I don't even remember what Healy says, but then he just kind of, like, brushes it off.
It's like, I fell in the lake or something like
that. Yeah. Oh, he's like, I went in the lake. I don't remember. He says something about the lake. And that lake is gross, too. Like, I think that's the lake, right? Isn't that the lake that the ladies went? Or maybe not. Maybe it's a different lake.
No, I think
it's got to be different.
It was in the city or something.
Like, yeah, because there were lights around it and stuff. So, yeah, it can't be the same lake. But, but yeah, but Piscatella is just kind of like, okay, like, you're solving my problem. So, you're not my problem. Mm-hmm. Like, you go. And then he goes and he finds Lolly. And it's like,
yeah. And she comes out with it, you know, I just wish I could go back and not kill that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like, so painful.
It is. And she, it was as much as kind of we've talked about, like, violent outbursts and things like that, with, you know, psychotic people don't always necessarily, and we didn't really see, actually, she was violent in season 2, I think, but, like, that might have just been her, mm-hmm. like, I don't know. But, we talked about how psychotic people don't necessarily always have violent tendencies, but sometimes people with mental health disorders do things that, and it's like, that's definitely a very controversial area, but they do things that they don't necessarily, like, have full control or cognition over, and, like...
Yeah, well, especially Lolly, like, she gets agitated, she gets irritated, mm-hmm. and she has, you know, hallucinations. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if they're command hallucinations, but they were pretty...
They're
kind of nasty sometimes.
They tell her, I don't know all the different, they're not telling her
they
to do
paranoid.
Anything.
They're paranoid.
Paranoid. Yeah. Yeah. They're just basically telling her the water's dirty, like, you're going to die, like, no one's your friend, like, mm-hmm. these people mm-hmm. want to get you or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're very paranoid. Yeah. And we don't really hear her have any of those voices in Litchfield, I don't think.
I think we do.
We did, did we?
Yeah.
I don't remember. But regardless, she's in her time machine.
She's got these persecutory delusions, and she, mm-hmm. you know, she thinks that, like, every government agency is out to get her, right?
Right. Well, we don't hear, like, them in her head. Like, I think we only heard them in her head in
maybe
Flash.
You're right.
I don't, I mean, it doesn't, I guess it doesn't really matter. But she's just actively having them
yeah.
when she's in Litchfield. And she, you know, she did this thing, and she regrets it, and she, I mean, she doesn't go to Max, which... is interesting. Haley brings her to psych, yeah. right, at the end. But, like, psych, in a way, is, like, worse. Because I know, you know, all throughout the seasons, like, what do they do with Brooke when she took the pills? They were like, we can't let her go to psych. Like, we have to, like, keep her up here. Mm-hmm. And then, like, with Doggett went down to psych for a mm-hmm. while after she beat up Piper. And, like,
yeah, she didn't come back looking too great.
She didn't come. She, like, it was, like, a nightmare for her. It's way worse. I mean, and Nikki didn't really love Max and she relapsed there. But, like, it didn't really seem, I mean, it didn't seem great. But it didn't seem like.
But at least you have people.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe in psych you have less interaction with other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were showing as Lolly walked down, like, she's getting more and more horrified. Like, she's realizing what's happening and that she's going to psych. And there's people strapped to bed screaming. And, like, I mean, very much, like, the quintessential, traditional, like, way that people think of, like, psych yeah. wards. And stereotypical, like, people being strapped down, like, meds, screaming, like, syringes, like, of yeah. whatever. And
but it is a psych ward in a prison, and some mm-hmm. of these people may be violent, and, you know, like, so I guess I have never been to a prison psych ward, but mm-hmm. it doesn't seem far-fetched to me.
Right.
Some of the things that people are most afraid of about psych wards would happen in a prison right. psych ward.
Yeah. And that's something, I haven't really found anything. I mean, that's probably, although, I mean, the prisons shouldn't necessarily be the very first treatment, like, treater of mental health, but yeah, it just, you know, it seems like hell, basically. Like, Lolly's going to, like, this yeah. awful, terrible place where.
Even the fact that it's, like, in a basement.
Mm-hmm. No windows, like, I mean, I don't see any windows. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of like solitary confinement, only with, like, mental health professionals that don't really care and just pump you full of meds and, so, yeah, so it was just, like, a very tragic end, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is kind of promising that, like, maybe once they treat her, like, we'll get, like, she did commit murder, but, like, maybe we'll get her back next season?
I don't know. Somehow doubt that.
I don't know.
I think she'll probably go somewhere more secure.
Mm-hmm. Or just, like, stay in the psych ward, which would be just, like, awful.
I don't know. Do people stay in the psych ward long-term in a prison? Or do they get transferred to a different facility that, like, handles?
I'm not sure. And she has been transferred quite a lot. Because she yeah. does talk about, like, at first, when she first gets transferred, she's like, this is so great. This is wonderful. Like, this mm-hmm. is whatever. And then she eventually changes her tune. But she has been transferred a lot. So she maybe they'll just transfer her. Maybe we'll never see her. I liked her. So I'd like to yeah. see her again next season. I also missed, like, Miss Claudette, who was from, that's like a totally different thing, but from the first season, she was like the Creole, she was from Haiti, I think, or she oh God, she ran yeah. the, and she went to Max, and I'm always like hoping that she'll come back.
Oh, I don't even remember.
So I'll hope for Lolly for like a lot of seasons, I'm sure. but yeah, so I guess, I don't know, I don't really, aside from the fact that I hope Lolly comes back, and she's maybe treated appropriately in psych instead of treated like the people that we saw, which is probably not going to happen, but,
yeah. Well, and frankly, like, she actually didn't kill that guy.
That's true.
And, like, it was arguably self-defense, or at mm-hmm. least defending another inmate, mm-hmm. so, you know, she doesn't really deserve like, mm-hmm. probably the consequences she's going to get.
Mm-hmm. And the only way that anyone would find out that she didn't kill the guy is if Alex told them. And also, you know, no one really ever asked her, like, why she mm-hmm. killed the guard. Like, he just comes in, like, again, like, Healy just wants the basic information. Like, he comes and he sits down next to her and she's like, I got the potato. And it's, like, so sad. And she's
well,
like,
well, but you wonder if this is going to be the end of the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they got their person and now they're done. Or if they're going to actually investigate what was the motive, what were the circumstances, who was this guy.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And I think, well, yeah, I think there's, like, a little bit more about it later. Like, maybe next episode. But, yeah, like, I don't know. And, like, how did he go missing for X amount of time without anyone, like, how did he decompose in, like, a garden?
He couldn't have been on the job for more than a couple of days, right?
Because I think that was, like, his first day.
Yeah, because yeah. you would think the moment Voss saw him, mm-hmm. the jig was up.
She would know, yeah. And those guards are, like, rotated throughout, so mm-hmm. it's not like he could have hidden from her for a long mm-hmm. period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all just so coincidental that, like, he came in at the same time all this, like, tragedy. I mean, you know.
The days that they all escaped.
And yeah. And there was, like, eyes were in different places. And so, mm-hmm. you know, but it's all for the sake of narrative and story structure. So, but But yeah, and I mean, I'm sure Alex will carry that guilt too, because she knows that she killed him, so.
And she knows that Lolly is serving her time, so mm-hmm. to speak, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lolly Alex saved her life, and Lolly's getting punished for it.
Yeah, Lolly did save her life. Yeah. At the end of the day, she really did. And, I mean, I guess, you know, I guess that's not necessarily... So that's not... I mean, we have seen Lolly be violent, though, in season two, but I think that was probably before... I'm not sure, but I feel like that was probably before the writers decided to give her some sort of, like, any sort of mental
more
health issue. Like, a more... like, figured out, like, what her mental health issues were.
Yeah.
Or figured out what role she was going to play mm-hmm. in the future seasons. But she does get violent with someone in season two at that, like, random, like, holding prison.
Mm-hmm.
She beats some lady down in the yard... for just, like, talking to her wrong or something, so maybe they just sort of melded the two, but, like, I don't think Lolly was super out of line when she attacked that guy. Like, she had to attack him the way that she attacked him.
She was saving Alex's life.
Mm-hmm. Although she does treat it, like, very cavalier. Like, she's just kind of like, okay, let's go to the lake, like, after she does it.
Yeah. That's so strange. Mm-hmm. She's a mystery. But then again, like, she's a fictional character.
Right, yes.
So we can't always expect that, like, mm-hmm. her behavior is going to be what we would anticipate from, like, real people.
Right, right. And that's, like I said, like, I think that's a really important distinction to make, that, like, the two people on the show are, they're fictional.
Mm-hmm.
They have issues that we do need to address in the real world, but, like, the fact that both of them are violent, like, we can't extrapolate that.
Yeah, there's a lot of creative license being taken, mm-hmm. right? Like, as soon as you have somebody who... I think writers sometimes will say, like, okay, this person's got a mental health issue, so we can pretty much make them really unpredictable. We can make them do whatever, and we can just chalk it up to they have mental health issues. And, like, so the audience isn't going to be like, what? Why did that person do that? Mm-hmm. You know? Because not everybody, like, thinks that way or mm-hmm. knows, like, the details or the intricacies or, like, the nuances, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of times, like, especially I run into this problem when I try and, like, diagnose fictional characters and I can't, like, figure it out. I'm like, mm-hmm. but the writers probably didn't diagnose them either. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, they don't, I mean...
They just threw a bunch of symptoms together mm-hmm. in a lot of cases.
Which is, like you said, like, with... Like, obviously with Lolly, like, she has schizophrenia. Like, yeah. she does, but, like, she's, you know, got secondary diagnoses mm-hmm. too, probably. Mm-hmm. But that's probably why Suzanne is so difficult mm-hmm. to diagnose, because mm-hmm. she's just, like, a conglomerate of different... odd things, like,
yeah, and so. In reality, like, no matter how many people you've seen with the same disorder, you mm-hmm. never have seen the same thing twice,
right
so
that's true. We're all individuals.
There may be a Suzanne out there and I just never met her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, true. Or, like, someone, you know, someone with all the opposite symptoms of, you know, mm-hmm. whatever, like, there's, everyone's, like, total individuals, and no one can be, like, that's why diagnoses are so, they're so helpful, but they're also, like, damaging mm-hmm. too, like, they can be both. And I think you and I talked about it, and Greg and I talked about it on the episode about schizophrenia too, that, like, the diagnosis of, specifically of schizophrenia, but even, like, depression, like, when people get that label, like, some people feel so relieved mm-hmm. to have that, mm-hmm. and some people feel so, like, trapped almost, or label, like, the label sticks, and then mm-hmm. like, oh, you have depression, or you're schizophrenic, like, I know what to expect from you because you have this label now.
Yeah.
There's
so much tied up in that. Like, I've seen people who, you know, were definitely meeting criteria for bipolar disorder be really resistant to, like, a bipolar mm-hmm. diagnosis because, like, their parent had bipolar, or mm-hmm. their classmate always said, oh, you're so bipolar, or, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And they have a lot of stigmatism that's mm-hmm. Attached to that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And the stigma is what's, and like I said, like, it can hurt.
Say stigmatism.
No.
I have an astigmatism. It's why I wear glasses.
I do. I have a glasses. But yeah, I.
Stigmatization would be the word.
Yeah. No, I got you. But the stigma can be, I mean, I guess stigma kind of has, like, a negative connotation to it, but the stigma of it is kind of separate from, like, sometimes when people, like, even with bipolar, or even with a lot of different disorders, I find that people find so much relief in getting a diagnosis, because they're like, I'm not the only one going through this.
Yeah, I've seen that happen too, and it's an explanation. It's like, mm-hmm. oh my god, that's why,
mm-hmm.
you know, this has been happening, and there's things you can take that are going to balance you out, and, like, mm-hmm. you know, might work really well for you. You, like, don't have to live in this, like, crazy state of existence. Right. you know, like, oh, there's a reason why you, like, went and ran up all this debt on your credit cards. You're not just a bad person. Like, you were in the midst of a manic episode. Like, that can be really helpful for people. Because then it's like, okay, I know what the problem is. I can work on solving it.
Right. Yeah. And there's, like, a community of people that are going through the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times with, like, the internet, like, that's a helpful thing. Like, you can find other people that are going through not the same exact thing, because we're all individuals, but, like, similar things, and, or, like, find a group in your area, or find something where you can reach out. Like, with Laurel House, I know, you know, when I talked to Greg, like, he deals with people with psychotic disorders, and, like, they're all in the same group, and they can talk about their experiences and find that, like, they're not, quote-unquote, crazy. Like, they're not the only ones going through it. There are other people that are going through the similar thing, and find how those people dealt with it and kind of compare notes a little bit.
Well, that's the big therapeutic value in groups, right? Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of clients you have to explain that to. Like, I've had people tell me, like, oh, well, I only want individual therapy. I don't really do well in groups. I don't want to share in groups. But that's the big
thing. Or, like, these people are crazier than I am. Or these people are worse than I am. Or these people... Oh, God, we used to get that all the time.
Sometimes the primary therapeutic value is, like, destigmatization and, like, empathy and de-shaming. And just being able to share and feel, like, kind of normal with people who are going through similar things.
Exactly. And I think... And yeah, like, I keep kind of going to that, like, there's a push and a pull with the diagnosis, and there's a push and a pull with, like, labeling. So so with, you know, with these women on the show, like, maybe Lolly has schizophrenia, but she's also, like, a person. Like, she also has all the, like, we have to treat it both ways. We have to treat it as, like, a diagnosis where we can, like, have a jumping off point, but, like, she's an individual too. So,
and it's so interesting how her, like, delusions kind of intertwine with, like, probably what her personality and her passions are. If she didn't have a diagnosis, right? Like, she probably would have been, like, a really great gumshoe reporter.
And
maybe she'd be, like, blowing the lid off of, like, really important stories.
Maybe she would have, like, gone undercover at a prison, like Shane Bauer.
Maybe she is undercover at a prison. Ooh. Maybe she's deep undercover.
Oh, that would be quite the twist. I think that's a good place to stop. Thinking about Lolly as, like, an undercover reporter at Litchfield going into the psych ward. But, well, thank you so much for talking to us. I always appreciate it. And you can always reach us. This week, actually, we're going to be doing... on Monday. This isn't going to go up on Monday, but every Monday we do an episode of the show. This Monday we're going to, well, we're recording. But anyway, every Monday at 9 p.m. At You've Got Time Pod on Twitter, we're going to live tweet an episode. The episode will be at the very top of the Twitter page, so you'll know which one we're tweeting. And then you can also reach us at Facebook at facebook.com/YouveGotTimePodcast and at on email at youvegottimepodcast@gmail.com. Thanks, guys. Bye.